Okay, part three.
Mantras 12 to 14. No, now we're doing 12 to 14. We just did 9 to 11. I hope you know that we just did 9 to 11. Oh, God, I hope you know we just did 9 to 11. Oh, do I have to go back and teach it over again?
And this. How well you learn is my grade. Okay? I get a grade on this course too, and that's how well you all learn. Okay, 12 to 14. Materialistic religion and is detrimental, and transcendent religion without bhakti is worse. So again, this is unusual. Generally in the Shastra, we say that the jnanis and the yogis are better than the karmis. So here we're saying the jnanis and yogis can be worse than the karmis. Difference between relative and absolute, and again, that you have to understand both. So here we have our bug again. And now our bug, instead of going to the mirror, the bug is now going to a screen. So we got a little better here. So now the bug's on a screen. It's the poor buggy is stuck on the screen and it can't get out of the room. Again, the problem with being on a screen is you don't look for the real thing. Right? Haven't you found that? The poor buggy's on the screen and you open the door and you try to get it out the door and it's so convinced that the screen is the outside that it won't go to the door. And the screen is worse than the mirror because the screen, you can feel the outside, can't you?
Yes.
So you really feel that you're outside. The mirror, you just kind of get a reflection of the outside. The screen, you really feel the outside. So with misused knowledge, with something like evolution or just materialism, you may think, yes, I will achieve all of my spiritual goals. I'll achieve happiness and peace and satisfaction and so forth and so on. But boy, when you come to a transcendent religion, wow, now I'm really going to achieve all these things. But you're just on a screen. And so we've got another wolf in sheep's clothing. Now, again, what a strange verse. Who, remember the modes of material nature? What worship is in goodness? Demigod worship. Interesting. Here it says, darkest region of ignorance. Prabhupada goes at length in this purport, talking about how the material world is dark. He said it's like a coconut. And if I had more time on the internet yesterday, I would have downloaded a picture of a coconut. Then he says the world's like a coconut. It's like it has an airtight shell, and it's all dark inside. And because the demigods are part of the dark world, therefore, by worshiping the demigods, you stay in the darkness.
So material religion means worshiping the demigods?
Well, materialistic religion, yes. Or we could even say sometimes it includes worshiping Krishna as if he's a demigod. This idea of worship in order to enjoy the world. Let's put it that way. That I'm engaging in religion to enjoy the world. Please give me a car and a home by the sea, O Jai Jagadishari. Now, but generally again, we say that if you're interested in Brahman, that's better than if you're interested in just this dark world. At least you're interested in something spiritual. Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavaniti, Subjute. The absolute truth is called Brahman, Paramatman, Bhagavan. At least you're interested in the absolute truth. The problem is that if people are preaching impersonal religion, that often that can take people away from bhakti. Sariputta found out something very interesting. If you read his book, Alien Identities, which is about spaceships and aliens on other planets. He found that people who had contact with spaceships and beings for other planets were often being preached to an impersonal philosophy. He found that these demoniac beings from other planets or other realms were preaching impersonalism. And don't we say that the demons go into the Brahmajyoti? So often a worship of Brahman is a religion of demons. Like Hiranyakashipu, he said, we're not this body. So it can be a demoniac kind of religion, wanting to destroy
God is a person. So here Prabhupada's talking about how it's a coconut. So therefore, if you're worshipping the demigods, you're still within the darkness.
Just like a coconut.
Should have brought in some coconuts. Prabhupada here talks about impersonalists who say they're incarnations of God. Are there a lot of them, especially here in India? There's a whole bunch of these incarnations of God. There's one lady I know, really nice lady. She loves coming to the temple and everything, but she worships one of these incarnations of God. She told me she had a health problem, and she said, but soon I'm going to go to India and I'll see Bhagavan and he can cure me if he wants. So these people who say they're God. I was once asked to preach at a home program in London, and I was told that many of the people attending were devotees of one of these incarnations. So at the end, somebody asked me, how do you recognize a saintly person? So I was quoting the verses from Bhagavad Gita. Then they said, how do you recognize an incarnation of God? I said, well, first of all, they have to be very beautiful. Now, there was there was silence. And I was told that afterwards, many of those people decided that they wanted to worship Krishna. So I was really happy about that. And you will find that Srila Prabhupada very, very rarely will criticize these people by name. Almost never. Certainly not publicly.
I heard that, I'm just checking maybe, but I heard that he said that if you kill a, what's the name of this animal who leaves a stink? A stink?
A skunk. Your hand gets a bad smell.
Yeah.
It was very unusual for Prabhupada to mention any of these people by name. Very unusual. Sometimes privately he would, but very unusual. He would just talk about the principle, and then people have to be intelligent enough to apply that principle. And sometimes when people would ask Prabhupada, what do you think of so-and-so? He would say, oh, what's their philosophy? And he would talk about their philosophy. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes Prabhupada would say, I don't know, but this is the principle. It's quite interesting. According to Shastra, one should neither praise nor criticize anyone. Mm-hmm. And Bhaktivinoda Thakura says that, of course, in the course of preaching, we have to sometimes praise and criticize certain things. Otherwise, we can't instruct people. You have to say, this is good, this is bad. And without giving specific examples, it's very hard. Mm-hmm. If we're just going to say, well, this is bad, you sometimes want to say, just like this. Just like this person or just like that person. But we should be careful about criticizing individuals.
I heard lots of time devotees criticizing Osho, his life, his style.
Who?
Osho, Rajiv Osho.
Rajneesh.
We should be careful. I would prefer to follow in Prabhupada's footsteps and not criticize people by name. You can certainly talk on principle that if people say they're God, you know, and they have to go to the dentist, then they're probably not God. And if their way they're God is that they manufacture some ashes or a piece of gold, you know, that doesn't mean you're God. Maybe you have some mystic powers. Okay, great. Or just magicians. You know, you can go to Las Vegas and see magicians who appear to turn into tigers. And that doesn't make them God. But just because somebody can fool you with magic, with some illusion, or even if they have some powers, you know, Houdini had a lot of powers, it doesn't make him go.
I was in such group for three years before I joined this camp, and I think we have to be very careful with these people that you, I switched to Krishna consciousness because the devotees handled me in the right way. They said, God has to be beautiful. Then I decided I had an altar already. I was already worshipping. I had the guru, and I had Radha Krishna already, and then I added Prabhupada, and then later I took away the guru. But I was already doing some worship, and I had some idea of different things.
Yes.
I think we have to be very careful.
I agree. If you're not very careful, then people won't even hear anything you have to say. So if they're very attached, if someone is already very attached to something. I once went to one lady's house where she was telling me that she was struggling to get rid of the demigods on her altar. And I said, well, I'll come and I'll help you. And she said, okay. But then it was really interesting. After I took them off, she put them all right back on. I said, look, you can just put them over here. And after you do your worship to Krishna, then you can make your offering to the, you can offer the prasadam to the demigod. Anyway, she wouldn't do it.
When Lord Chaitanya was on the planet, did he not have to go to the dentist and things like that?
There's no record of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu going to the dentist. Although one time he did get sick, and he asked to drink the water that had washed the feet of Brahmanas, just to show how great the Brahmanas are. And one time Krishna had a headache and asked for the dust of the feet of his devotees. But actually, of course, God never gets sick.
Because other many times they say, you know, these people that claim to be avatars, they get old, they get sick, like that. So Lord Chaitanya...
He never got old.
How did he disappear? I was always wondering about that.
He went into a temple... And just didn't come out.
And there were no remnants. And Nityananda also.
They just disappeared. Hey, Prabhupada sometimes says very heavy statements about these false gurus. Sometimes he says they go to hell and their followers go with them. It's the false impersonalists.
But somehow, these followers, at least they get some knowledge about...
Well, you see, these are the two ways of looking at it. As I said, these verses in Ishvara, this is unusual. So, if somebody is following one of these bogus people, but they're also worshipping Krishna and they're saying Krishna's name, do they get any benefit from that or not? Is it bad? Is it good? Is there an absolute answer for this? I don't think so. I think it depends on the situation. I think you have to look at the situation. There's a school I visit in London, which is a really, really nice school. It's called St. James. And they mix Christianity and Mayavad philosophy. They're a very interesting school. They really like us. And they teach Sanskrit. It's a very sattva guru school. It is such an impressive place. But they're teaching the kids Mahabharata and Ramayana. And I remember being in the class, and they separate the boys and girls from the beginning, from age 4, they separate the boys and girls. And they have only women teachers for the girls. They said they tried having only male teachers for the boys, but it didn't work till they were 7. They said they said the men couldn't handle the 4 to 7-year-old boys. it was interesting. Anyway, I was in one class of all about 10, 11-year-old girls who were reciting Ramayana in Sanskrit. Sound like I was in Swargaloka. It was really quite an experience. So, are they getting benefit for it? I don't know. I mean, they seem to be innocent to me. It seemed to me that they were innocent. I'm glad I'm not, you know, Yamaraj or Krishna, that I have to make judgments on all these things, because I can't. We can just say in principle that teaching truth in a way that causes people to be offensive can be more destructive. Yeah?
Is there a difference between innocence and ignorance?
Not much. Not much. Yeah, they were ignorant. In other words, you couldn't say they were offensive.
Right. But ignorance can be offensive. If you're so ignorant.
I think of as offensive as deliberate knowing. Like Robert said, sin is deliberate disobedience.
If you ignore someone, it's like... If you ignore someone, you know they have to
ignore. You choose to ignore. Ignorance can also be like that. These are the different components of this verse.
About different gurus, which position for us will be better when we hear about the same spiritual materialist have some defects, or is bad, or only my guru is pure devotee?
Oh, within ISKCON?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's not. Let's not. I don't want to do that. Sorry. I'm just not going to go there. I'll just say that you know, thinking that my guru is the only guru is also Kanista Adhikari. Let's just say that. Okay. These are all elements of the difference between the worship of demigods and the impersonal. Right, so anyway, to sum up Mantra 12, we could say that false religion, false transcendent religion, may be worse than materialistic religion. My one experience of this that made this sort of clear to me, I was taking a course in counseling, and we had two different teachers. One teacher taught one, we had 3 days a week, like 8 hours a day. One teacher taught one day, and the other teacher taught 2 days. The one that taught 2 days was an impersonalist, a very spiritual person, a very like New Agey spiritual person, who was vegetarian, who believed in reincarnation, and in fact had let me take the course for free because he said it would be his good karma. And he let me cater the parties with prasadam, and really nice person, but a very arrogant person. And he had a number of bad habits. He was very open about the fact that he smoked marijuana, and he was very open about the fact that he wasn't faithful to his wife. And he was very, very arrogant. Basically, if you said anything that he disagreed with, he'd make you feel stupid. Then the other teacher worked in Catholic services, and he was a very religious man. He wasn't a spiritual person, but he was a very religious person. And he was not vegetarian. He was not did not believe in reincarnation. He was a very humble person. It was quite interesting. He was very, very humble. He really respected all the students in the class. He respected everybody's opinion. And the difference was quite striking. They both knew their subject well. But I thought, well, misused spirituality can sometimes be worse than a materialistic religion. Mm-hmm. That was one experience that I had. Okay, Mantra 13 is just saying the same thing again that we got in Mantra 10. There's a difference. They're not the same. Where you go will take you to different results. It's not that whatever you do will take you to the same place. Different destinations. So there could be many airplanes going to Tokyo, but it's not that every airplane is going to Tokyo. Some are going to Tokyo, and some are going someplace else. And even all the ones are going to Tokyo. Some have a faster route. I used to travel a lot between Honolulu and Auckland, and there was only one airline, Air New Zealand, that flew a direct route. Everybody else, you know, they'd fly this way, and go through Sydney, you know. So the trip would be twice as long. So not everybody's going to perfection, and of all those who are going to perfection, not all of them are taking the easiest or most reasonable route. Yes?
What is considered perfection? Going back to Godhead, Goloka Vrindavan?
Let's just look at this from a logical, empirical point of view. If you could list all the needs that a human being has, all the universal needs of human beings, and there's several lists like that that have been compiled by different psychologists and psychiatrists. I'd say perfection would be achieving all of those needs perfectly forever. And whatever would do that would be perfection. And from what I've studied, I think that only the descriptions of the spiritual world would do that. I don't find that other descriptions of other destinations would accomplish that. So that's just from a very logical point of view.
So then does Prabhupada accept that there are other paths that can lead one back to Godhead that aren't in, or maybe other parampras or other religions?
Absolutely. Yeah, I heard that from him directly.
Could you, do you have time? I could ask you maybe after class.
Okay, if you were raised in a Jewish school, what's the translation to the Shema prayer?
I don't know.
You don't remember. What's the use of your education? So, you know, the Old Testament, one should love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and all thy mind. You remember that now?
And when Jesus was asked, what is the essence? He said, the essence is to love God with all your heart and all your soul and all your mind. And the second commandment, which is like the first, is to love your neighbor as yourself. And neighbor doesn't mean the other Catholics or the other Protestants or the other human beings. It means all living entities. And if you look at the Bhagavad Gita, what's Krishna saying? Love me, think of me, love me, and be kind to all living entities. Be a friend to all living entities. That's it. Now, it's very hard to love God if you don't know him. Can you find God in the other traditions outside of the Vedic? Yeah, but it's hard. It's really hard to find God in Islam and Christianity and Judaism. It's possible, but it's very difficult. You're not going to find that in the mainstream. If you go to a mainstream church or mosque or synagogue, they're not going to be talking about the form and the activities and the pastimes and the qualities of God. A little bit. They'll talk a little bit about his qualities, but not much. And how do you fall in love with someone you don't know?
In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, give all varieties of religion and discernment. Does that mean all religions, or does that mean?
No. It means stop playing the game. Quit your monopoly game. Give up all sorts of materialistic dharma. So if the religion isn't a transcendent religion, then yes, it would mean giving up that religion. But there's a lot of Vedic religions that aren't transcendent too. There's a lot of aspects of Vedic religion that are materialistic. So most religions on the planet today are teaching that the goal is what? What are they teaching?
God.
No, they're not teaching the goal is love of God.
Heaven.
Or?
Sense gratification.
It's the same. Heaven, sense gratification is the same. Say heaven on this planet or heaven on another planet. Or what?
Money.
The goal of their religion is not hell. Some people have their goal to go to hell. I don't think that's their goal, it's means. That's heaven. Or?
Liberation.
Either salvation or sense enjoyment. So most religions today, including most followers of Vedic religions, are teaching that the goal of their religion is some sort of heavenly situation on this earth or on another somewhere, or liberation. So either attaining happiness or getting free from distress. So most religions are not teaching that the goal is prema, although it's in the scriptures. It's in the scriptures, and there's descriptions of God in their scriptures, or at least in some of their mystic writings. The Kabbalah describes that God is a blue boy. But, you know, you're not even allowed to touch that unless you're a male rabbi who's like 40 or more. Mm-hmm. You're not even allowed to have anything to do with it. As you were saying the other day, you know, I don't know that much about Islam or Buddhism. But there's a lot of Christian saints who talk about God as their child or God as their beloved. And some of them were burned at the stake for that.
Sufism talks about the love.
Yeah, Sufis. That's Sufism, the
is that different?
That's the mystic branch of Islam.
Yeah. Yeah.
But as far as mainstream, so if you're going mainstream Islam or any of the mainstream branches of Christianity or mainstream Judaism, you won't hear this sort of stuff. You'll not hear. You know, you've got the Song of Solomon that says the eyes of my beloved are like that of the doves. And you know, if you compare that to Prithu Maharaj's description of Sankarshan, it's practically the same. But, or David, King David is describing, sounds like he's describing either Narayan or Ramchandra, describing the Lord with bows and arrows and as the supreme king. But if you go to these mainstream religions and you say, oh, God must be a person with a form, they say, no, he's not. It says God wrote on the tablets of stone with his finger. If you say, oh, he must have a finger. No, he doesn't. And it says Moses saw God face to face like a friend speaks with another friend. Oh, he must have a face. You must be able to be his friend. No, that's just poetry. So that's...
Like in the Bible says, we are the same images and
yeah.
Similar to that.
Yes.
They have no form.
Exactly.
I think
so.
It even gives the colors. He's got the color of lapis lazuli.
Yeah,
the Bible
that's a Song of Solomon. You think? But they don't see that. They don't see that. So that's not what their teachers are teaching. That's not how their teachers are interpreting their scriptures or applying their scriptures. Generally. There are some exceptions.
Because of the desire?
Yes, obviously. There's different systems of religion to facilitate different people's desires and different people's levels of advancement, just like there's different universities. You don't have to convince me. I'm convinced. But they don't see it.
I grew up in Catholic school and left after high school. And this like question of why don't we see pictures of God, what does God look like, it was just like, not really talked about.
Exactly. Either they won't talk about it, or they make you feel bad for asking the question.
Yeah, exactly.
That happened to me.
Why do you have to?
That happened to me. Don't ask that question. Yeah. So I got that. Okay, we gotta move. And as far as other Vedic paramparas, certainly. Although most of them are aiming at Vaikuntha rather than Goloka. Most the other Vedic paramparas are mostly aiming at Vaikuntha and not Goloka. You really notice that if you go to Tirumala. You really notice it there. After a couple days there, you're thinking, this is a great place, but there's something funny. Oh, there's no Radharani. It's just Lakshmi. Okay, so what cause are you worshiping? Where are you going? Are you worshiping the supreme cause? Prabhupada talks about, are you pouring water on the leaves or are you pouring water on the root? Prabhupada gives a lot of evidence in this purport that Krishna is the supreme. That you can only attain the supreme cause if you become purified. Okay, our last mantra, mantra 14. This is a really nice mantra for those of you who have any interest in education. This is my mantra, mantra 14. I really feel that this mantra is the answer to what we should teach our children. So you have to know both. You have to know both the temporary and the eternal. It's interesting, Prabhupada's translation of this verse, what he's getting from Sambhutim and Vinash. So from Sambhutim, he's getting personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, his transcendental name, form, qualities, and pastimes. And from Vinash, he's getting the temporary material creation with its temporary demigods, men, and animals. So that's how Prabhupada's translating those two words. So, material knowledge isn't sufficient to attain perfection. Prabhupada's main emphasis in these verses is material knowledge is not enough. You have to know Krishna. You have to know his name, form, and qualities. And material knowledge is not sufficient to solve the problems of life. Just with material knowledge, you cannot become happy and peaceful and find meaning and satisfaction and fun and all these things that we want. It's not going to ultimately solve your problem. And it's not sufficient to attain real freedom. Prabhupada says in the first canto, the need of the soul is for real freedom. But spiritual knowledge is not sufficient either. Because we have to use Krishna's energy in his service. You have to know how to take care of the cows. How to brush your teeth. Right? How to drive your car. Prabhupada makes a point in this purport that the body and mind are used in service. You have to know how to take care of them. We also have to learn how we're implicated in material nature. Remember I talked about this before? When we talk about learning material nature, we're talking about two things. We're talking about how do I function in the world? How do I drive a car? How do I make money? How do I repair the plumbing? We're also talking about things such as the modes of material nature and reincarnation. Because that's about the material world. That doesn't go on in the spiritual world. That's also material knowledge. So in these purports and in general, Srila Prabhupada is stressing that you have to have the spiritual. Prabhupada is not stressing that you have to have the material. And I'd like to just, I told you I was going to talk about this, I'd like to just talk briefly about this. Srila Prabhupada was coming from India. Those of you who are Indians or have hung around India for a while, are the Indians really into higher education?
Yes.
Oh my God.
So
they're so attached to this material education and everyone has to get the top grades. There's a hysterical video on YouTube called Indian Parents. Oh, it is. And it's true. It's true. It's really funny, but it is true. If you can ever get onto YouTube and type in Indian Parents, it shows this couple in their kitchen in their bathrobes talking about educating their child. I really, truly dealt with Indian parents who were just like that, no exaggeration. So, you know, they're thinking when their kid is 6 or 7, how are they going to get a master's degree?
Yeah.
They really are. And if the kid fails one spelling test, they have a fit. How will my kid get a master's degree if they failed one spelling test? I said, nobody will even know when he goes for his master's degree that he failed the spelling test when he was 6. So Prabhupada was coming from that kind of a culture. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada did not feel the need to preach about the importance of materialistic education. He figured everybody already accepted that, and therefore he preached about spiritual education. So please keep that in mind. Now, Prabhupada's first disciples were mostly hippies who had already decided that all education was foolish and who weren't really interested in anything material. So when Prabhupada preached, when Prabhupada emphasized the spiritual, a lot of those early disciples said, great, we don't need to learn anything material anymore. And so in the early years of ISKCON, things were greatly off balance as far as the education of the children and as far as even the adults and what kind of education and training they got. All right, just something to know. All right, it is now 2:00. So have a wonderful Lord Nityananda's appearance day tomorrow. And I will see you on Friday. Please be prepared with your presentations.
And we'll have the test after lunch.
No, that will be on next Wednesday. Okay, just everybody quiet for 1 minute. Just to remind all of you, okay, there's no class tomorrow. Tomorrow you can go to Ekachakra or you can go to whatever you want to do and have fun with Lord Nityananda. On Friday, we will be doing 15 to 18. The first hour of class will be 15 to 18. So you should please read 15 to 18. Yes, teacher. We will also be going over all those questions on Ishapanishad that are in your book. I'll be doing one of those walk-around question things again with the questions from the whole Ishapanishad. So we know the answers to those. Then we will take a break. And after the break, we will come back, and each one of you will present this, your thing, as a review. And you have about 10 to 12 minutes each, and you can present it however you want, and you can divide it up, or you can do it as a group, wherever you like. Then, there's no class on Saturday, or Sunday, or Monday, or Tuesday, but there are the Bhakti Satachar classes, and you can go to that. We will have class next week, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, where we'll be discussing the qualities of a Bhakti Shastri. Wednesday, we'll have class at the normal time, and then after lunch, you'll have the exam. And if you have any other questions, please don't ask me, because I told you, I've given you all of my knowledge, and now I'm exhausted. I now have no more knowledge to give you. Any more knowledge on this topic, you have to ask for each other. And there's an announcement over here. Please give your kind attention and respect to Olivia. Thank you.
Slot attached for 5 and 6 will be Friday after lunch.
This coming Friday.
I will be this Friday after lunch.